thinks Connor. More likely they'd go to the other place. Because if their own parents didn't care enough about them to keep them, who would want them in heaven?
What makes you think unwinds don't go?
Diego asks Embi.
Because unwinds aren't really dead. They're still alive. Sort of. I mean, they have to use every single part of us somewhere, right? That's the law.
Then Hayden asks the question. Not a question. The question. Asking it is the great taboo among those marked for unwinding. It's what everyone thinks about, but no one ever dares to ask out loud.
So then, says Hayden, if every part of you is alive but inside someone else, are you alive or are you dead?
This, Connor knows, is Hayden bringing his hand back and forth across the flame again. Close enough to feel it, but not close enough to burn. But it's not just his own hand now, it's everyone's, and it ticks Connor off.
Talking wastes our oxygen, Connor says. Let's just agree that unwinding sucks and leave it at that.
It shuts everyone up, but only for a minute. It's Embi who talks next.
I don't think unwinding is bad, he says. I just don't want it to happen to me.
Connor wants to ignore him, but can't. If there's one thing that Connor can't abide, it's an unwind who defends unwinding.
So it's all right if it happens to us, but not if it happens to you?
I did say that.
Yes, you did.
Ooh, says Hayden. This is getting good.
They say it's painless, says Embi, as if that were any consolation.
Yeah, says Connor. Well, why don't you go ask all the pieces of Humphrey Dunphy how painless it was?
The name settles like a frost around them. The jolts and rattles of turbulence grow sharper.
So, you heard that story too, says Diego.
Just because there are stories like that doesn't mean unwinding is all bad, says Embi. It helps people.
You sound like a tithe, says Diego.
Connor finds himself personally insulted by that.
No, he doesn't. I know a tithe. His ideas might have been a little bit out there, but he wasn't stupid.
The thought of Lev brings with it a wave of despair. Connor doesn't fight it. He just lets it wash through him, then drain away. He doesn't know a tithe. He knew one. One who has certainly met his destiny by now.
Are you calling me stupid? Says Embi.
I think I just did. Hayden laughs.
Hey, the mouth breather is right. Unwinding does help people. If it wasn't for unwinding, there'd be bald guys again. And wouldn't that be horrible?
Diego snickers, but Connor is not the least bit amused.
Embi, why don't you do us all a favor and use your mouth for breathing instead of talking until we land, or crash, or whatever?
You might think I'm stupid, but I got a good reason for the way I feel, Embi says. When I was little, I was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis. Both my lungs were shutting down. I was gonna die. So they took out both my dying lungs and gave me a single lung from an unwind. The only reason I'm alive is because that kid got unwound.
So, says Connor, your life is more important than his?
He was already unwound. It's not like I did it to him. If I didn't get that lung, someone else would have.
In his anger, Connor's voice begins to rise, even though Embi's only a couple of feet away at most.
If there wasn't unwinding, there'd be fewer surgeons and more doctors. If there wasn't unwinding, they'd go back to trying to cure diseases instead of just replacing stuff with someone else's.
And suddenly the mouth breather's voice rings out with the ferocity that catches Connor by surprise.
Wait till you're the one who's dying and see how you feel about it.
I'd rather die than get a piece of an unwind,
Connor yells back. The mouth breather tries to shout something else, but instead goes into a coughing fit that lasts for a whole minute. It gets so bad, it frightens even Connor. It's like he might actually cough up his transplanted lung.
You okay?
Asks Diego.
Yeah,
says Embi, trying to get it under control.
Like I said, the lug's got asthma. It was the best we could afford.
By the time his coughing fit is over, it seems there's nothing more to say, except this.
If your parents went to all that trouble, asks Hayden, why were they having you unwound?
Hayden and his questions. This one shuts Emby down for a few moments. It's clearly a tough topic for him. Maybe even tougher than it is for most unwinds.
My parents did decide the order, Emby finally says. My dad died when I was little, and my mom died 2 months ago. That's when my aunt took me in. Thing is, my mom left me some money, but my aunt's got 3 kids of her own to put through college. So,
he doesn't have to finish. The others can connect the dots.
Man, this stinks, says Diego.
Yeah, says Connor, his anger at Emby now transferred to Emby's aunt.
It's always about money, Hayden says. When my parents were splitting up, they fought over money until there was none left. Then they fought over me. So I got out before there was none of me left either.
Silence falls again. There's nothing to hear but the drone of the engine and the rattle of the crates. The air is humid and it's a struggle to breathe. Connor wonders if maybe the fatigues miscalculated about how much air they had.
We're all gonna die in here. That's what Emby said.
Connor bangs his head back sharply against the wall, hoping to jar loose the bad thoughts clinging to his brain. This is not a good place to be alone with your thoughts. Perhaps that's why Hayden feels compelled to talk.
No one ever answered my question, Hayden says.
Looks like no one has the guts.
Which one? Asks Connor.
You've got questions coming out of you like farts on Thanksgiving.
I was asking if unwinding kills you, or if it leaves you alive somehow.
Come on, it's not like we haven't thought about it.
Emby says nothing. He's clearly been weakened by coughing and conversation. Connor's not interested in volunteering either.
It depends, says Diego. Depends on where your soul is once you're unwound.
Normally, Connor would walk away from a conversation like this. His life is about tangibles, things you can see, hear, and touch. God, souls, and all that has always been like a secret in a black box he couldn't see into, so it was easier to just leave it alone. Only now, he's inside the black box.
What do you think, Connor? Asks Hayden. What happens to your soul when you get unwound?
Who says I even got one?
For the sake of argument, let's say you do.
Who says I want an argument?
Híjole, just give him an answer, man, or he won't leave you alone.
Connor squirms, but can't squirm his way out of the box.
How should I know what happens to it? Maybe it gets all broken up like the rest of us into a bunch of little pieces.
But a soul isn't like that, says Diego. It's indivisible.
If it's indivisible, says Hayden, maybe an unwind spirit stretches out, kind of like a giant balloon between all those parts of us in other places. Very poetic.
Hayden might find poetry in it, but to Connor the thought is terrifying. He tries to imagine himself stretched so thin and so wide that he can reach around the world. He imagines his spirit like a web strung between the 1,000 recipients of his hands, his eyes, the fragments of his brain. None of it under his control anymore, all absorbed by the bodies and wills of others. Could consciousness exist like that? He thinks about the trucker who performed a card trick for him with an unwind's hand. Did the boy who once owned that hand still feel the satisfaction of performing the trick? Was his spirit still inexplicably whole, even though his flesh had been shuffled like that deck of cards? Or was he shredded beyond all hope of awareness? Beyond heaven, hell, or anything eternal. Whether or not souls exist, Connor doesn't know. But consciousness does exist. That's something he knows for sure. If every part of an unwind is still alive, then that consciousness has to go somewhere, doesn't it? He silently curses Hayden for making him think about it. But Hayden isn't done yet.
Here's a little brain clot for you, says Hayden. I knew this girl back home. There was something about her that made you want to listen to the things she had to say. I don't know whether she was really well-centered or just psychotic. She believed that if someone actually gets unwound, then they never had a soul to begin with. She said God must know who's going to be unwound, and he doesn't give them souls.
Diego grunts his disapproval.
I don't like the sound of that.
This girl had it all worked out in her head, continued Hayden. She believed unwinds are like the unborn.
Wait a second,
says MB, finally breaking his silence.
The unborn have souls. They have souls from the moment they get made. The law says...
Connor doesn't want to get into it again with MB, but he can't help himself.
Just because the law says it, that doesn't make it true.
Yeah, well, just because the law says it, it doesn't make it false either.
It's only the law because a whole lot of people thought about it and decided it made sense.
Says Diego. The mouth breather has a point.
Maybe so, but the way Connor sees it, a point ought to be sharper than that.
How can you pass laws about things that nobody knows?
They do it all the time, says Hayden. That's what law is. Educated guesses at right and wrong.
And what the law says is fine with me, says MB.
But if it weren't for the law, would you still believe it?
Asks Hayden.
Share with us a personal opinion, MB. Prove there's more than snot in that cranium of yours.
You're wasting your time, says Connor. There's not.
Give our congested friend a chance, says Hayden.
They wait. The sound of the engine changes. Connor can feel them begin a slow descent and wonders if the others can feel it too. Then MB says,
Unborn babies. They suck their thumbs sometimes, right? And they kick. Maybe before that they're just a bunch of cells or something, but once they kick and suck their thumbs, that's when they've got a soul.
Good for you, says Hayden.
An opinion! I knew you could do it.
Connor's head begins to spin. Was it the plane's banking or a lack of oxygen?
Connor, fair is fair. MB found an opinion somewhere in his questionable gray matter. Now you have to give yours.
Connor sighs, not having the strength to fight anymore. He thinks about the baby he and Risa so briefly shared.
If there's such a thing as a soul, and I'm not saying that there is, then it comes when a baby's born into the world. Before that, it's just part of the mother.
No, it's not, says MB.
Hey, you wanted my opinion. I gave it.
But it's wrong.
You see, Hayden, you see what you started?
Yes, Hayden says excitedly. It looks like we're about to have our own little Heartland War.
Pity it's too dark for us to watch it.
If you want my opinion, you're both wrong, says Diego. The way I see it, it's got nothing to do with all of that. It has to do with love.
Uh-oh, says Hayden.
Diego's getting romantic. I'm moving to the other end of the crate.
No, I'm serious. A person don't got a soul until that person is loved. If a mother loves her baby, wants her baby, he's got a soul from the moment she knows it's there. The moment you're loved, that's when you got your soul, punto.
Yeah, says Connor. Well, what about all those babies that get storked? Or all those kids in state schools?
They just better hope somebody loves them someday.
Connor snorts dismissively, but in spite of himself, he can't dismiss it entirely, any more than he can dismiss the other things he's heard today. He thinks about his parents. Did they ever love him? Certainly they did when he was little, and just because they stopped, it didn't mean his soul was stolen away, although sometimes to admit that, it felt like it was. Or at least, part of it died when his parents signed the order.
Diego, that's really sweet,
Hayden says in his best mocking voice.
Maybe you should write greeting cards.
Maybe I should write them on your face. Hayden just laughs.
You always poke fun at other people's opinions, says Connor.
So how come you never give your own?
Yeah, says MB.
You're always playing people for your own entertainment. Now it's your turn. Entertain us.
Yeah, says MB.
So tell us, says Connor. In the world according to Hayden, when do we start to live? A long silence from Hayden, and then he says quietly, uneasily,
I don't know.
MB razzes him.
That's not an answer.
But Connor reaches out and grabs MB's arm to shut him up, because MB's wrong. Even though Connor can't see Hayden's face, he can hear the truth of it in his voice. There was no hint of evasion in Hayden's words. This was raw honesty, void of Hayden's usual flip attitude. It was perhaps the first truly honest thing Connor had ever heard him say, Yes, it is an answer, Connor says. Maybe it's the best answer of all. If more people could admit they really don't know, maybe there never would have been a Heartland War. There's a mechanical jolt beneath them. Emby gasps. Landing gear, says Connor.
Oh, right.
In a few minutes they'll be there, wherever there is. Connor tries to guess how long they've been in the air. 90 minutes? 2 hours? There's no telling what direction they've been flying. They could be touching down anywhere. Or maybe Emby was right. Maybe it's piloted by remote control and they're just ditching the whole plane in the ocean to get rid of the evidence. Or what if it's worse than that? What if it's a harvest camp after all? Says Emby. Connor doesn't tell him to shut up this time, because he's thinking the same thing. It's Diego who answers him. If it is, then I want my fingers to go to a sculptor, so he can use them to craft something that will last forever. They all think about that. Hayden is the next to speak. If I'm unwound, says Hayden, I want my eyes to go to a photographer, one who shoots supermodels. That's what I want these eyes to see. My lips will go to a rock star, says Connor. These legs are definitely going to the Olympics. My ears to an orchestra conductor. My stomach to a food critic. My biceps to a bodybuilder. I would wish bicitises on anybody. And they're all laughing as the plane touches down.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Unwind by Neil Schusterman, performed by Luke Daniels. Risa doesn't know what went on in Connor's crate. She assumes guys talk about guy things, whatever those things are. She has no way of knowing that what occurred in his crate was a reenactment of what happened in her own, and in almost every other container on the plane. Fear, misgivings, questions rarely asked, and stories rarely told. The details are different, of course, as are the players, but the gist is the same. No one will discuss these things again, or even acknowledge having ever discussed them at all, but because of it, invisible bonds have been forged. Risa has gotten to know an overweight girl prone to tears, a girl wound up from a week of nicotine withdrawal, and a girl who was a ward of the state, just like her. And also just like Risa, an unwitting victim of budget cuts. Her name is Tina. The others told their names, but Tina's is the only one she remembers. We're exactly the same, Tina had said sometime during the flight. We could be twins. Even though Tina is Umber, Risa has to admit that it's true. It's comforting to know there are others in the same situation, but troubling to think her own life is just one of 1,000 pirate copies. Sure, the unwinds from state homes all have different faces, but otherwise, their stories are all the same. They even all have the same last name. And she silently curses whoever it was who determined that they should all be named Ward, as if being one weren't enough of a stigma. The plane touches down, and they wait.
What's taking so long? Asked the nicotine girl impatiently. I can't stand this.
Maybe they're moving us to a truck or another plane, suggests the pudgy girl.
They better not be, says Risa. There's not enough air in here for another trip.
There's noise. Someone's outside the crate.
Shh, says Risa. Listen.
Footsteps. Banging. She hears voices, although she can't make out what the voices say. Then someone unlatches a side of the crate and pulls it open a crack. Hot, dry air spills in.
The sliver of light from the plane's hold seems bright as sunlight after the hours of darkness.
Is everyone all right in there?
It's not a fatigue. Risa can tell right away. The voice is younger.
We're okay, Risa says. Can we get out of here?
Not yet. We gotta open all the other crates first and get everyone some fresh air.
From what Risa can see, this is just a kid her age, maybe even younger. He wears a beige